Welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO synopsis here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, D. Andrew, and tonight my guest is Farah Yurduzu. Farah was born in Istanbul, and at 13, she became a hypnotic trance medium at Turkey's Center for Metaphysical Studies, one of the world's oldest institutions devoted to the paranormal research. She went on to become Turkey's first female UFO investigator, author of 4 best-selling books and many magazine articles, and host of her own popular TV show still broadcast throughout the Turkish-speaking world. Now living in New York, Farah's bringing her insights to a broader audience. Welcome, Farah. How are you doing this evening?
Hi, I'm fine. Thank you very much for this nice invitation. Right now, I'm in New Jersey, and you are in Arizona?
Yes, ma'am.
Am I right? You are in Arizona, and I'm very sure that we are going to have a very interesting show tonight during 2 hours.
Well, like I said, before we started this evening, I read your book and found it quite interesting. And also you noticed, you mentioned rather, that you were at the Bay Area conference yesterday, was it?
I was a guest speaker at Bay Area UFO Expo in California, San Jose, almost four weeks ago. It was held on 25th, 26th of August. So this summer has been a very busy summer for me because I spoke in 4 UFO conferences and also television and radio interviews. So it was a very busy summer. I'm very happy for having a busy summer.
Excited to meet you at the conference in Roswell, New Mexico, here in July. It was interesting because the booths were right next door to each other, or right next to each other.
Yes, we were neighbors. And
it was great.
Yes, we were neighbors. Our booths were neighbors, and it was my first time in Roswell. And this year, I was invited to speak in Roswell UFO Conference. I gave a lecture and a workshop. Generally, in all those conferences, this is what we do, one lecture and one workshop, and it was great. And I really liked Roswell. Everything was wonderful. And the best thing is, you know what? Being on the stage, sharing the research, the information, the investigation with the public is a big responsibility for a UFO investigator or for any other investigator. But I enjoy very much the backstage of ufology. So this is how we meet each other. This is how I met you, on the backstage. So it is not only giving the conference, giving the lecture, or giving the workshop, but it is also meeting new people. And it is the best part of participating to UFO conferences for me.
I like the idea of sharing information at these conferences myself, or in hearing the other speakers, or all the speakers and their viewpoints and their research. What was your workshop on at Roswell?
Well, basically, it was about my family's first close encounters with reptilian beings. I know it sounds very strange, but it happened almost 100 years ago in my family. And my great-grandfather, my grandmother's father, was a university teacher at Istanbul University in Turkey. He was teaching French and mathematics. And he was a science man. As far as we know, he never had any interests to paranormal subjects or supernatural beings. But one night, he was visited by 2 reptilian beings. And in those times, this happened in 1890s. In those times, people didn't know about UFOs. People didn't know about extraterrestrials, aliens, or greys, or reptilians. What he saw was 2 reptilian beings, half human, half reptilian characteristics, and they looked like males, even though they didn't have any clothing they look like males. So my great-grandfather believed that they were demonic creatures. They were demons from another dimension. So he described them to his wife after the incident, and from his wife to their children. So this is how we heard about the story. He was very scared of their eyes because they had vertical reptilian eyes, typical reptilian beings. Anyway, after this close encounter, or after this visit, in our family, a paranormal or supernatural psychic gift started. Because the two reptilian beings, before they left, they looked at my great-grandfather and they said something. They said, from you to three generations. So, starting from my grandmother and her brothers and sisters, suddenly they developed psychic gifts. And my grandmother was a very good psychic. Not professionally, but the psychic investigation, spiritual investigation, was a part of our family, always. And my grandmother's brothers, they were lawyers. They were very, very interested in spiritual investigation, and they were psychics too. So this happened in our family. They were the first generation. The second generation of psychics was my mother's and grandmother's and aunt's generation, second generation. In the third generation, it is me. So since I was very little, I had my own encounters, visitations, and I started to develop psychic ability. And also my cousins, they are coming from the same family, and they have been experiencing very interesting abduction cases in the last 10 years. And after the abductions started, one of my cousins, she suddenly developed psychic gifts. So this is how everything starts in my family. And about your question, my workshop was about this story and about other things too, as well as other things.
Very interesting. You were talking about that in your book as well.
Yeah.
In your book, you were telling about the Turkish tribal stories of star people.
Yes, yes.
Could you expand on that for me, please?
Of course. Now, everything is about Turkish nations or Turkish races' origins. What is our origin? Our origin is a little bit cosmic. Turkish people used to be called Göktürk in the ancient time. Göktürk means sky people. So when you make a translation, when you translate this title or the name into English, it means the people who came from the sky. So where do we look at? We look at the first creation stories, first creation mythology. There we have basically two different creation stories. First of all, the creation starts with the visits of extraterrestrials to the Earth. Turkish people originated from Central Asia. In fact, they came to Central Asia from the lost continent Mu. But let's start from Central Asia. And they were nomadic societies. And also they were shamanic. So our original religion, Turkish nation's original religion, was shamanism. Just like the native Indians of North America or Central America or South America. And another interesting thing is that our culture is almost the same culture with the native Indians of North and South America. Our mythology, our beliefs, our cosmology, symbolism is same. the musical instrument, the lifestyle is almost the same. Now, in our creation stories, a human, an extraterrestrial human, comes to Earth inside of a bright sphere or a ball of light and gets married to one of our very important Turkish tribe leaders, who is a man, but he is a hybrid too. So, after this marriage, Turkish nation starts. And the other creation story talks about the wolf. According to other creation story, Turkish nation starts with the visits of a wolf which comes from the sky to the earth. Now, wolf symbolism is very important for Turkish nations still today because wolf symbolizes the dog star Sirius. We see the same thing in ancient Egypt. We see the same thing in native Indian societies. And Turkish people, since ancient times, know that our real origin, celestial origin, is Sirius. Because for us, Sirius is the spiritual sun. And we believe that we are protected and guided by Sirius vibrations, or the beings who came from the Sirius. So, still today, the symbolism of Sirius and Dog Star, or the wolf, is everywhere in Turkey. Also, still today, many Turkish nations in Central Asia, still modern republics, they are using the wolf symbolism on their government flags. So it is a very ancient knowledge. It is not mystery. It is almost very obvious that we know our cosmic origin and we keep that knowledge alive using it, first of all, on the flags. So again, in Roswell and in last month's Bay Area UFO Expo, I showed the same things in my workshops. In one of the very early money bills from the modern Turkish Republic, a money bill from 1920s, probably 1925, there is the picture of a wolf, which symbolizes Turkish race, and also there is the five-pointed star, which symbolizes the Sirius. So even in the early years of the modern Turkish Republic in 1920s, the money bill was showing our cosmic origin. Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, more?
I was going to say something and then it sounded like you were going to say something.
No, I mean, yes.
In your book, you were tying in several of the shamanic ways of the Navajo with the Turkish.
Oh, yes, yes. Again, as I mentioned to you at the beginning of the show, the backstage of ufology is fascinating. Because this year, in March, I was invited to Aztec UFO Symposium in New Mexico again. I spoke there, and in that symposium, I talked about the shapeshifter beings which exist in Turkish tradition. So, what is a shapeshifter being? It is generally not a very lovely being. It can be a little bit scary, but it exists in ancient and modern time Turkish cultures. Still today, in some towns, in some remote villages of Turkey, people is very afraid of a being which is called Scarlet Lady. Scarlet Lady is a shapeshifter being. It looks like a human, but as he or she or it is a shapeshifter, it can easily change her look into an animal or into a man or into the looks of a deceased person. This being, Scarlet Lady, let's call her, attacks to the newborn babies, attacks to the young boys and girls, and attacks to the horses and animals. Now, she kidnaps the babies from the houses. This reminds us some of the abduction cases, some of the abduction reports. And also, the shapeshifter, Scarlet Lady, is very interested in animals, especially horses and cows' internal organs. So, as we know, cattle mutilations have been a very important part of UFO investigation almost in the last 30 years. So, we had a being who caused a tragedy, looks like a cattle mutilation, in the last 4,000 or 3,000 of years in Turkey. When I was talking about this case of shapeshifter beings in Aztec, at the end of my conference, two Navajo ladies came and they told me that they want to speak with me. I said, of course. And we had a very interesting conversation. Later, I interviewed them. They told me that they are living in one of the reservations in that area, in Aztec area. And both of them are coming from the Navajo race. And still today, they have the shapeshifters and skinwalkers where they are living. And they said, what you are telling in this workshop, in this conference, is a part of our culture, is a part of our Navajo culture. And I said, no, this is Turkish. They said, no, this is Navajo. And I said, you know what? Turkish race's origin is the same origin with yours. We are coming from the same origin. That's why we have the same beliefs. That's why we have the same symbolism, same mythology, and same kind of evil or the benevolent beings in our creation. And they were very excited to know that in a very far country on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, on another land, the same things have been happening. And this is not only the history, this is not only the mythology. They still keep having problems with skinwalkers and shapeshifters, and the similar things still are happening today in Turkey. People, especially in the remote towns, not in the big cities, of course, are still very scared of that creature who is called and Scarlet Lady.
I think I would be too.
Well, yes.
Like a scary individual.
Normally, because today, still it is difficult to say who is causing the cattle mutilations and what is the purpose, why they are doing this, who is doing this. But the same things have been happening in my country. And still, we have been collecting data. We have been trying to understand the historical facts or modern facts. But still, we are not in the position to give the final answers.
excuse me. I was looking through your book to was looking at the photograph of Mount Nimrud.
Yes.
I think I said that right. I'd like to know a little more of that. Ancient spots like that fascinate me.
Yes. Now, in Turkey, the most important thing is that we have a 5,000 years old history. And we had on Turkish land many different civilizations. Many different civilizations started and ended, started and ended. And when you look at the history, when you look at the back, in almost every different civilization, they had this extraterrestrial contact. So everything starts with the visit of the extraterrestrial gods. So now, you know what is funny? Today, Turkey, modern Turkish Republic, is an Islamic country. We became Islamic. At the beginning, we were shamanic. Today, we became Islamic, so we believe in only one God, just like in it happens in Christianism or in Judaism. But in our history, in the past, we had lots of gods. We had every kind of gods. It is hard to believe that how many gods visited Earth and tried to teach us things. When you look at the history, especially in Turkey, the number of the gods are more than the number of the humans. So obviously they weren't gods. They were some superior beings who had the advanced technology. They were different in many ways. They had advanced technology, which was called a kind of magic or supernatural power by the normal humans. Most of them, as they were coming from different star systems or different planets or different dimensions, they didn't look like us. Some of them were hybrid looking. Some of them were described as half human, half animal. And they looked different. And that's why they were respected and they were given the name of the gods. They weren't gods, obviously. They were just beings from another planet. So, in Turkey, we had this multiple god inflation for some reason in the past. And gods, or the extraterrestrial visitors, preferred Turkey a lot. Why Turkish land? The reason is that Turkey, geographically, is situated on a very important ley line. It is a huge triangular ley line which crosses Turkey as a triangle, which I call Turkish UFO triangle. We have some specific spots that UFOs prefer to visit those places in the past and still in today, especially I have to talk about this summer's UFO activity in Turkey, if you have time later. Anyway, sure. Mount Nemrut is in the southern eastern part of Turkey, and there is a huge mountain, and on the mountaintop there is a temple and also a man-made pyramid. It is a very impressive pyramid. So what happened there? Almost 2,000 years ago, there was a kingdom in that area, Komagene Kingdom. And the King Antiochus was very interested in cosmology. He was very interested in astrology. And he had close friendship with the gods who preferred to descend there. Gods gave him the instruction how to make a temple for themselves. So the temple was built on top of the Mount Nemrut according to the instructions given by the gods. Also, on the temple, on top of the mountain, there is the most ancient astrological horoscope chart of the world. It shows a very important date. It shows a couple of things. First of all, it shows the birthday of King Antiochus, because as I told you before, he was very, very interested in astrology. And the astrological chart was made into a shape of lion, because the king was born in horoscope signs, Leo. So the horoscope shows 109 before Christ, July 14th. Now, this is King Antiochus' birthday, and also the day that he was crowned, but also it shows the date when the God descended to earth. So, I also mentioned a pyramid on top of the mountain. Pyramid is man-made, and it consists of millions of rock pieces. Still, nobody managed to find out what is hidden inside of the pyramid. According to some claims, there is an ancient UFO, but this is only a claim. I didn't see. I have no proof, so I cannot say that, yes, there is a UFO under the pyramid. There is something, but we don't know. Also, the other thing is that under the Mount Nemrut and under the temple, we know that there are incredible galleries, underground galleries, which they are linked to the other underground cities that we have in Turkey. Underground cities of Turkey is almost the number of the underground cities, 100. And according to some investigators, they are linked to underground city Agartha. In time, in the past, two important persons of the philosophical world, George Gurdjieff and Elena Petrovska Blavatsky, they came to Turkey. They spent time in Turkey because they were looking for the Big White Brotherhood founded by the extraterrestrials. And they believed that Nemrut Mountain and that civilization was founded by the same white, great, white brotherhood, extraterrestrial brotherhood. So, the brotherhood center was that temple. In fact, it wasn't a temple, it was a school. So, during the kingdom of Antiochus, extraterrestrial beings were training and teaching the humans. So that's why they needed to build that temple. But in fact, it was a center of teaching and training.
That was very interesting. I hadn't made the connection between the temple there and the underground cities and the cities all carved in cliff sides and
yes,
all over Turkey.
Yes.
I saw a documentary on those underground dwellings and the cliffside cities on a documentary here not too long ago, and was just absolutely fascinated with it.
Yes, yes.
Some people in our virtual auditorium were just discussing, and I'm not sure whether it's pronounced Atatürk or Atatürk.
Atatürk.
Atatürk, okay.
Atatürk.
You meant call him the first exopolitics.
Yes.
Person.
Yes. Mustafa Kemal Atatürk was our first president and the founder of modern secular Turkish Republic. His background is military. He was a very good military man. He was a perfect politician, a world famous politician. And he was a writer at the same time. He was writing history books. He was a multi-talented person. He was very interested in history. And he decided to research the cosmic origins of Turkish nation. And he knew that our cosmic origin is from Sirius. That's why he used the wolf symbolism in many places. In fact, Atatürk was called the blonde wolf. So the symbolism was very clear. He, in 1930s, he heard about Lost Continent Mu, and he read the books written by James Churchward. James Churchward was one of the persons concluded investigations, research in Mexico about Mayan culture, because Mayan culture is based on the Mu culture. So Atatürk read those books. In fact, he got them translated only for himself. And he started to make some research on ancient Mayan language and ancient Turkish language. And what he found was amazing, because he found out that between ancient Mayan language, which was based on Mu language, and ancient Turkish language, there was incredible similarities. Most of the words are the same. Many words are the same. So he believed that our origin is Mu, and he sent investigators to Mexico to make more research on Mu theory. And the findings was that when the Mu continent was destroyed after natural disasters, a group of people who survived, they came to Central America and the northern part of America. So, in the central part of America, Mayan civilization started. In the North America, Hopi civilization started. Another group who survived after the natural disasters, they came to Central Asia and Turkish civilization started. That's why our origin is the same. And Mu continent, or Mu civilization, was established, was founded by extraterrestrials. So the cosmic origin comes from Sirius to Mu, and from Mu to Central and Northern America and to Central Asia. So that's why we are sharing the same beliefs, same symbolism, and same mythological stories. So Atatürk was looking for Turkish nation's origins in an extraterrestrial source. So that's why he was the first exopolitician leader, because he didn't want to limit his vision, or he didn't want to limit the vision of his country. He wanted to see, he wanted to find out the real, real origin, and he did it. But I'm sure, or we think that, many people around him in that time didn't like this reality. So just before he made his disclosures, he was murdered, poisoning. So somebody or some group of people who didn't like his discoveries, they poisoned him. And he was given many different medications, and each medication made his situation worse. So he died in 1938, and when he died, most of his files related to Mu investigations were lost. They were lost during many years, because there were 14 or 13 different files. And recently, some of them were found. But for many years, a group of people, whoever they are, they didn't want the public to know our real origins.
Interesting. excuse me, there's a lady in our chat room by the nickname of Prism of Light, and she asks if you have an interest in both ufology and the paranormal. Does the two mix?
Yes.
Does one have to do with another, and do you feel there is an there are ETs in spirit?
Well, UFO cases or UFO reality consists the paranormal reality inside, because UFOs as a vehicle, as a flying object, causes paranormal activity on the field, on the electronical devices. They cause, they affect the engines of the cars, they affect the electrical tools and everything. So this is something paranormal, out of the normal. Something happens. The second thing, in close encounters. In close encounters with the extraterrestrial beings or in close encounters with the UFO. During and after the close encounters, experiencers start to develop paranormal abilities. What happens? This person first starts to have precognitive dreams about the future, about political changes, about natural disasters, or about his or her own life. So a paranormal activity starts. Just it happened to my great-grandfather. And second, most of the abductees, let's go a little bit further, and let's say that the witness, the experiencer, was abducted or was taken to the board, to the craft. After the abduction, after the very close encounter, again, the experiencer starts to develop very advanced paranormal gifts. Not everybody, but most of the experiencers. So this shows us that UFOs, extraterrestrials, are having paranormal powers, and they can give us their paranormal power. Other thing, in almost 80%, maybe 90% of close encounters and abductions, the communication between the humans and extraterrestrials is not verbal. It is telepathical communication. So again, we can see that extraterrestrials have the paranormal talents. And when they start that telepathical communication, we can answer them in the same way. We can hear them, whatever they are saying, in our minds. They don't move their mouth, but we hear everything that they say in our mind. So that's why paranormal activity and UFO activity is coming together. But what about the spiritual activity? What about the spiritualism? Yes. In my country, and also here in the United States, in Europe, whatever. Again, a percentage of the UFO abduction witnesses or the experiencers develop some spiritual gifts after the abduction. They can heal people spiritually. Spiritual healing starts. So they can, even though they never had any interest or they never had any talent on these things before the abduction, after the abduction, they develop spiritual healing. So why this happens? How this happens? That's why for me, in order to understand UFOs and extraterrestrials, we have to accept the spiritual and paranormal aspects.
When you talk about the spiritual healing, it reminds me of an elderly gentleman in Mexico who had a sighting. And before the sighting, he had lost all of his teeth. Mm-hmm. And after the sighting and all the experiences that went along with it, the man grew another set of full set of teeth that had mm-hmm. everybody absolutely amazed. So I was just kind of like, you know, that popped into my head when you were talking about the spiritual healing and the extraterrestrials. Another lady in our virtual auditorium, TRMT137, says, wonder if you think that there is any ET activity in the underground caverns in the Cappadocia region and that you mentioned in your book.
Yes. Now, Cappadocia, where the underground cities exist, has been a very active UFO hotspot in Turkey. Especially in 1980s, we had dozens of UFO sightings and landings in that area. And we have the biggest underground cities in that area, normally they have 27 floors, 27 stories under the ground. And all those floors are linked to each other with galleries and stairs. But only 7 or 6 floors are open to public visit. And they look like they are just like a huge city, but under the ground, floor by floor by floor. Now, also, again, in Turkey's ancient belief, we believe the existence of a reptilian race. And according to some claims, again, these underground cities were built by the reptilian race. Also, the underground cities were built 5,000 years ago, but whoever built them, reptilian or not, they didn't want to leave any information behind. There are no wall paintings or writings, ancient writings or wall paintings, on the caves. So as if they built them, they used them, and then they left them, or they didn't want to be there anymore, but they didn't want to be known. They didn't want to leave any traces behind. Later, first Christians used those underground cities to escape and to hide from Roman soldiers. Because at the beginning, as you know, Christianism was forbidden in Rome, the Roman Empire. And Turkey was a very important part of the Roman Empire. And Christianism started in Turkey. The first Christian churches are in Turkey. The first Christians later built their churches inside of the underground cities, and still today they are under protection of the UNESCO. You can see the first Christian church on the wall paintings, and we have wonderful churches there. It's amazing. It's the history, I mean, the history of the religion, history of the society. So, UFO activity, yes, keeps going on, but we don't know about the reptilian race. We know about one thing. Saint George, a very important Christian saint, he was from Cappadocia, and he is famous as the warrior who defeated the dragon race. Just like Saint Michael, but Saint Michael is an angel. Saint George was a saint, but he was a warrior. He wasn't an angel. So he defeated the dragon race in Cappadocia. So again, we are not looking for a real animal dragon there. But if the dragon race symbolizes the reptilian race, we may think about a war or a kind of disagreement between the humans and between the reptilian race who built the underground caves, underground cities. So what happened to the reptilian race? Are they gone after the humans had a disagreement or after the humans defeated them? Obviously, if we are talking about a reptilian race, it wasn't only one Saint George who defeated them. It represents the human race. So, this may mean a real physical war, or this may mean a spiritual agreement between two races. Everything is based on symbolism. But again, symbolism tells us a lot. So, Saint George was from Cappadocia. He defeated the dragon race, reptilian race. They are gone now. Probably they are hiding somewhere, or they don't want to be there anymore for some reason. So all these things are interesting.
Interesting tie-ins on all of these. I hadn't ever thought of the dragon in the St. George story of being a reptilian race.
Yes, yes. And later, St. George became the saint of England, but he is originally from Turkey, because, as I mentioned before, Christianism, Christian religion, starts in Turkey. And again, it is religion and UFOs are very much connected. How? Let's talk about this. Now, we were in Cappadocia, but now I want to take you to Istanbul, where I was born and lived. Istanbul is located on the western parts of Turkey, and it used to be called Constantinople after the Roman Emperor Constantine, I mean Byzantine Emperor Constantine, because Roman Empire divided into two, and we became Byzance, it means Eastern Roman Empire. And Emperor Constantine was the Byzantine Emperor. So, according to historical information records, Emperor Constantine used to see flying shields in the sky. So, what could it be, the flying shields? Do you remember Kenneth Arnold's first UFO sighting? In his first UFO sighting, in fact, the UFOs were in shield shape. They look like shields. So Emperor Constantine saw a group of flying objects in the sky, and he made his description like flying shields, because he was an emperor, but he was a soldier, and of course he was using the shields all the time. Shields that they use in the war, Roman shields, was a very daily object that he knows very well. So he based his description on what he knows best. Anyway, he used to see flying shields. That's one thing. The other thing, later, he had another sighting. He saw a flying bright object shaped like a cross. He observed a flying cross in the sky, a bright flying cross. And he interpreted this sighting in the religious way. He said that God is giving me a message, so this is the cross, this is the symbolism of religion, and I have to be a Christian from now on. And I had to make the Christian religion the official religion of Rome. And he did it. He became Christian, and he made the Christian religion official. And Istanbul, Constantinople, became the first Christian city in the world. So, if this happened after a UFO sighting, imagine how UFO visitations have been affecting our world politicians. Here is the exopolitician idea. The life, the religion, the culture changed after a UFO sighting. Isn't this very spiritual now?
Oh, yes, yes. And Constantine's mother, if I remember correctly, took to the Christian religion with a fervor that I mean, the woman was totally obsessed with finding relics.
Yes. Yes.
We've got about 5 minutes before we go to our break.
Right? Okay.
I was just wondering, a quick little case that you can tell us about, that UFO case that you've investigated in Turkey.
Oh, there are so many, but what I'm most interested in, the close encounters and the alien abductions. Again, we have a very long-term contact case, which started in 1948, and the contactee kept in close relationships with the extraterrestrials almost 30 years, all his life. And this happened in Cappadocia again. And the person who was a shepherd, who was living in a very remote town, very remote village, without any electricity, without they didn't have television, they didn't have movies because they didn't have electricity, but he was visited by three extraterrestrials, and they kept visiting him during all his life, and they were teaching him almost every night in his home, where there wasn't electricity power. A kind of screen was opening, and he was able to see the life in that alien planet where the extraterrestrials came to visit him. So this we see in many other alien abduction and close encounter cases, because as we know, in some cases, extraterrestrials or aliens teach, train the abductee. They teach something. And there are also cases all over the world. And one of the similar cases happened in Turkey. And it started in 1948, interestingly, just after the Roswell case happened. Roswell case, 1947. Also, Kenneth Arnold sighting 1947, and the Turkish close encounter case started in 1948. So, in those years, UFOs were active in many parts of the world, not only in the United States, also in other parts of the world.
When you mentioned Kenneth Arnold, I used to live near Boise, Idaho, which is where Kenneth Arnold was from. Yes. One of my favorite little bookstores was across the street from the cemetery where he's buried. Little tidbits I throw in every now and then sometimes get off the wall. We have about 2 minutes before we go to break. You want to go ahead and give your website while we're...
My website is www.farahyurduzu.com. Let me spell it SARAHYURDOZU.com. And in fact, if you just Google my name and put UFO next to it, it will give my website and other links, related links, because I'm also a columnist for UFO magazine, for Malta UFO magazine, and I am a program producer for Jerry Pittman radio show. So any of those links will take you to my main website. So put Jerry Pittman and Farah, or UFO magazine and Farah, and Google it. It will take you to my website. It is very easy to find me.
Oh, fantastic. If we can go to break a little bit early, anybody who wants to go grab something to drink or to munch on, now's a good time to do it. And we'll be back with Farah in just a little while, and we'll be back to Eye to the Sky on the Paranormal Radio Network. And welcome back to Eye to the Sky, the UFO synopsis here on the Radio Paranormal Radio Network. I don't know why I get tangled tongue and do that. And we're here with my guest, Farah Yordazil. And we've been talking about the ET in ancient Turkish history. Now we're going to move into more recent. Farah, you were telling me that there was this interesting case that happened just this summer.
Yes, this year in 2007, starting May in Turkey, we started to have amazing UFO threats. It started in the mid-May, and UFOs were very active over and in our capital city, Ankara. Now, why Ankara? This summer, Ankara is the, yes, government's capital city. I mean, if you want to make a comparison, Ankara is like Washington, D.C. Istanbul, where I am from, is like New York City. So this is the comparison. They prefer to be closer to the government's capital city. The reason is that this year on July 22nd, in Turkey, we had the parliamentary election, which is very, very important for our political future, the nation's political future, and a new president was elected. Over that time, UFO activity got increasing. It was amazing, especially in July. The reported UFO cases were around 14, 15. And in Ankara, in Istanbul, and in another southern Mediterranean Turkish city, people were observing UFOs almost daily basis between May until the end of July. And after the elections, UFO activity kept going. So whenever there is an important political change in Turkey, UFO activity increases. For some reason, UFOs or extraterrestrials are very interested in with our political changes, political situation. So why is this happening? They used to be called watchers in the past. And again, our some politicians were very interested in UFO reality. So there is a common interest between UFOs and with some our old politicians. So this summer showed us that we are not alone, but we are under control. So while the nation was a little bit worried about the results of the elections and what is going to happen in the future because of the political party where the new president belongs, also the media, the Turkish media and Turkish television networks, Turkish newspapers, were a little bit worried about the results. UFOs kept visiting us, and they tried to give a message, and this message can be, don't worry, everything is going to be fine, or be careful, take your precautions. I don't know what was the message. The other thing is that some witnesses managed to videotape UFOs last summer, and one witness videotaped 7 UFOs in one night. So it was very clear that 7 UFOs were active at the same time. So many things happened, and again, UFOs were close to Turkey, and they were especially hovering over the mausoleum of Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, which is located in Ankara, and that mausoleum has a big meaning for us. It represents the modern Turkish Republic. So as they were over the Atatürk's mausoleum, I guess they were trying to give us a message of peace for the future. I'm hoping so.
Oh, so do I. Yeah. Has there been any other cases that you've investigated that have really, you know, was really spectacular to you?
Yes, and again, in Cappadocia region, in 1980s, late 1980s, when we had another important political change in Turkey, it is another story, UFO activity started. And it started in 1981, and it was all area was very active with UFOs all year. And in this time, people were observing UFOs in the daytime and nighttime. So it was a normal attraction for the local people. And who were those local people? They were teachers. They were people who used to work in government offices or policemen. So you cannot say that it was just a hallucination or illusion. It was a mistake or whatever. So reputable witnesses were observing the objects. Many times, witnesses reported that UFOs landed. So it wasn't only sightings, they landed. In one of the cases, a cab driver was driving on one of the highways in the evening hours. And on the right side of the road, he saw a bright object. A bright object was on the ground. And at the beginning, he thought that it was another cab. He stopped his car, he got off, and suddenly the object started to move and take off slowly. It was a huge egg-shaped object. And it was almost the same size of a normal, regular van. But it was egg-shaped, and there wasn't any wings, there wasn't any doors, any windows. And it was very, very bright. So when it was taking off and getting higher, the light was getting stronger, too. So in one point, the cab driver, the witness, had to close his eyes because the light was so bright. So this was only one of the cases. And the egg-shaped object, we are very familiar to them. It reminds me another case from New Mexico, Socorro case. In Socorro case, another witness, a police officer, Lonnie Zamora, observed another egg-shaped object too. So, related to UFOs, we also have Men in Black case in Turkey. In another case, again from Turkey, it is a long-term contact case. First, it started as a normal, regular UFO sighting. A young primary school teacher, he was working, again, in a remote town of Turkey. Not a very luxurious place. He was having a very simple, very modest life. And he was in the country. It was a country school, country life. So he was outside around midnight. And he saw a round shape, disc-shaped object was getting closer to the ground. And it landed. So, for a while, he watched the object, and he was under the effects of the electromagnetic field of the object. He didn't remember how long time passed, so it is not very sure if he was abducted, taken to some place or not, because he doesn't remember. He doesn't remember how long he stayed there watching the object. So it is possible that there was a missing time. So he stayed there for a while until the bright object, disc-shaped object, took off and left. And he didn't pay too much attention to this case, as if everything was normal. And this shows me that he was under the effects of a kind of hypnosis or a kind of something. Because in normal circumstances, you wouldn't react so calmly in a very close observation of a flying object. And the next night, around 9 o'clock in the night, he was reading at his home, and he was alone. Somebody knocked on the door. He opened the door, and there were three strangers, three young men on the door. As the teacher, the witness, lives in a very small town, everybody knows everybody in that kind of places. He never saw before his three guests. And the young men, the three young men, were wearing black suits, black ties, all the way down. And they said that they are coming from another neighbor town. And the witness, the teacher, invited them to have a cup of tea all together. And they accepted the invitation, and they sit in the living room. While they were in the living room, the witness went to the kitchen to prepare the tea, to boil the water, and he came back to the living room 2 minutes later. And surprisingly, the visitors were gone. They weren't in the living room. Now, let's remember that the house was a very tiny house. There was only one door. And if the visitors left from the main door, they had to go by the kitchen. So he would see them. And on the windows, there were iron bars. It was impossible for the visitors to leave from the windows. So he was kind of in a shock, and he decided to check outside. He went outside, and on the street, there was only one little girl playing on the street. And he asked the girl if she saw the three men. She said, yes, I saw them. And she pointed to the corner of the street. They looked, and there were three black dogs barking. So, what happened to the three men? How did they come there? And where did the three black dogs come from? This case, yes, it is a Men in Black case after a close encounter with a UFO, and also it is a shape-shifting case. So, three things happened at the same time. First, a UFO landing, then the visit of the Men in Black, and then a shape-shifting case. So this is one of the most interesting cases that I can remember right now.
Oh, that's really interesting. I remember reading about that in your book. Didn't you also find out that a neighbor lady started screaming and yelling that she just saw three men fly away?
Yes. In that moment, another woman, a normal human woman, came running, and she said, look at the sky, three men is flying. So it is a very complicated case. Did they shapeshift into dogs, and then did they fly? So what happened? And again, as it shows to me, the report shows to me, the witness was taken. So he doesn't remember what happened on the first night. I guess on the second night, the visitors came to check him after the first abduction. So it is possible that he was taken to somewhere, into the ship, into the flying saucer, or saucer, or somewhere, but he doesn't remember. So it's a complicated case. So this is one of the most interesting things. And also, there is one more thing in Turkey. In our belief system, before the Islamic religious, the Islamic religion, we accept the presence of the jinns. Jinn, first of all, means hidden. Jinns are the creatures created by the same God who created us, the animals, the planets, the stars, the cosmos. But jinns are created from the fire, which has no smoke. So fire, which has no smoke, can be a kind of energy, electricity or energy. Jinns are beings who live in another dimension. They don't live in our physical dimension, but they can see us, they can visit us, and they can affect our minds and our lives whenever they want. They can be visible when they want, but we cannot see them when we want. And they are shapeshifters too, and they cause lots of paranormal activity just like the extraterrestrials do. For example, jinns are mortals. They are not immortal, just like the extraterrestrials. Most of the extraterrestrials say that they are mortal. They are not immortal. And jinns, yes, they are not immortal, but they live 300, 400 years according to our measurements, just like the extraterrestrials. Extraterrestrials live longer than us. And jinns say that they don't have a soul. Humans have a soul. Jinns, they don't have a soul. And some of the extraterrestrials, especially grays, say that they don't have a soul. So that's why gray aliens call the humans containers, because they think that, they say that we contain a soul, and our soul, our spirit, or our essence, cosmic essence, the soul, is one of the reasons that extraterrestrials are interested in us, and they are trying to create a hybrid race which has human soul and alien intelligence. Now, talking about the alien intelligence, jinns are very intelligent beings. They are much more advanced and intelligent than the humans. And in Turkey, we have a saying, if a young child, little child, is very intelligent for his or her age, we call him or her intelligent like a genie. So they are intelligent than humans. And the verb genius comes from genie, jinn. So they are intelligent, just like aliens. And the other thing, jinns enjoy visiting human beings, especially in the night. Jinns visit human children in the night, and they take the human children to somewhere which is unknown to us. And at the end of the night, they bring back the children. And in Turkey, the existence of the jinns is something very normal. Especially parents are not worried about the jinn visitations, because they know that jinns visit the little children in the night and they bring back them at the end of the night. Now, we know that some extraterrestrials, gray or not, they prefer to visit people in the nighttime during the sleep. So abduction starts in the nighttime. And also, most of the abduction cases, abduction stories, start since the childhood. So they don't start to abduct the people after 45 years old. No, they start to abduct the people since the person was 2 years old, 3 years old, and it goes all life. Now, in Turkey, parents easily understand, easily can see that their child was abducted by jinns the night before. How do they know? because of a very strange brown color paint which suddenly appears on the hands, on the palms of the child. We call this in Turkey jintre. It looks like a henna. It's a brown color paint, and the child comes back the next morning with that brown color paint in both of the hands. Sometimes it can be shown on the other parts of the body, on the skin, and sometimes on the pajamas or on the t-shirt, whatever he is or she is wearing. Now, this brown color thing, I saw it many, many times, it is very difficult to wash off. It doesn't go away all day. Whatever you use, whatever soap or hot water, it doesn't go away. It is not a paint, it's just something else. And let's come back to our modern-day alien abductions. In many alien abduction cases, all over the world, abductee comes back from the abduction with the same brown color henna-type pink on the hands or sometimes on the other parts of the body, sometimes on the clothing. So for some reason, what we have been experiencing with the jinns looks like very much to the extraterrestrial alien abductions. So, jinns are a very accepted part of Turkish spiritual life, and we are not scared of them, even though jinns have different groups between each other. Some of them are benevolent, some of them are a little bit more dangerous and evil. So, what is happening with the extraterrestrials? Almost the same thing. Let's listen to the experiencers. Some of the experiencers are very happy to be taken by the extraterrestrials. Some of the experiencers are very happy to be taken by the extraterrestrials. They say that they are not harmful. They are here to help us. But some other groups can be a little bit more scary and evil. So the same thing is happening with the jinns in Turkey. And also, this is very unbelievable, the jinn encounters and jinn visits is a part of Turkish race in the past and today. And still today, in the modern time, many men and women, young men, young women, claim that they are married to jinns. They have jinn spouses, jinn wives, or jinn husbands. Today, many alien contactees, lots of men and women, they claim that they are married to extraterrestrials. Why this is happening? They claim that they are married to reptilians. There are cases like this. And in Turkey, and still today, I'm not talking about 5,000 years ago, I'm talking about 2000, many young women claim that they got pregnant from jinns and they have children. Many young men, they claim that they have jinn wives and they have jinn offspring. In Turkey, I was doing some television shows and I interviewed these people many times. And I asked them, okay, let's accept that you are married to a jinn or to a being which visits you in the night and you are the only one who can see them. And let's accept that you have children too. Where are your children? And they say that my children is living with the jinn family. I cannot see my children when I want. But sometimes they take me there and they show me my children. Okay, do we have the same things here with alien abductees? Yes. Abductees say that they have mysterious pregnancies, women, but they lose the fetus after 3 months old. But after a while, when they are on the spaceship or wherever there is, the extraterrestrials show them their children and they say, this hybrid baby is yours. The same thing is happening with the male abductees. They say that extraterrestrials have been receiving semen, sperm, from the men to create the hybrid babies, and after a while, on the board of the aircraft, they show them the children, and they say, look, this is your child. It's a hybrid child. So our gene presence and their activity between humans over humans is very much like to the alien abduction cases here.
Oh, what you were saying about gene being, you mentioned it in your book anyway, possibly from another dimensional, extra dimensional. Jacques Vallée, in several of his books, one that I'd have to go dig and dig it out and get the title of it, but one where he went into Central America to study deaths related to UFOs there. Mm-hmm. He stated that he felt that they were extra dimensional. And I just kind of, that popped into my head while you were saying that.
Yes. So I think we are dealing with different kinds of beings. Some of them, they are coming from another dimension, but they are not physical beings. So that's why they can shapeshift easily. They don't have a solid body. So they are shapeshifting, and they are more spiritually advanced beings. But spiritually or paranormally advanced doesn't mean that the being is a benevolent being. So spiritual advanced not always means that the being is a helpful being. So anyway, but some of them, they don't need the physical body. But some other of them, they are having a physical body, just like Grace, because they also use physical aircraft, just like UFOs. So it means that they still need to a physical container, they still need to have physical tools, such as a spacecraft, to be able to travel. But some of them, some beings, they don't need to have a physical body and physical UFOs. And again, we have been dealing with different kinds of beings, but the thing is that they never ever give us their complete identity report. So they show us just a little bit of everything, and we are trying to understand what are they, where are they coming from, what kind of a creature are they, based on our own observations and experiences. So which ones are coming from our galaxy? Which ones are coming from a spiritual universe? Because yes, there is a physical universe which we can observe and take pictures with Hubble telescope, that we can send satellites, whatever, this is a physical universe. But there is a spiritual universe, I mean, etheric universe. So, which ones are coming from the spiritual universe? Which ones are coming from the physical universe? Did they show us an identity card? No, they don't. So they just come and play with us and they leave. This is what they are doing.
What is the origin of the word jinn? I was just curious.
Jinn is an Arabic origin as a language, I mean, Arabic. And in Arabic language, it means hidden. So we have, for our society, we have the first information about jinns in Middle Eastern countries. But again, jinns are not limited in Middle East. So in many other societies, we can see the same beings, jinns, under different names. Again, one more thing, this is important. Jinns are described with shapeshifters, or they can change their looks, their shape, in whatever they want, but generally they show themselves as tiny, skinny creatures who have a kind of children look. They are short, they are skinny, and they are little, they are tiny, like a dwarf. And again, what we know about gray aliens, yes, they are tiny, they are very skinny, and they look like a child. At least they are in the same size of a child. They are not giants. So, are we talking about the same beings? Are the jinn the grays? We don't know. But what is happening with jinns is also happening with gray aliens. So are they good? Are they bad? We don't know. Because everybody's experiences is different, even though the same procedure is happening with everybody. So in a close encounter or in an alien abduction case, always the same things are happening, but some of the experiencers say that it was a very positive experience for me. Some of them, they hate it. So in fact, as far as I can see, humans are divided in two groups about extraterrestrials. Some of them say that they are here to help us, to save us, and the other group says that they are here to harm us. And our position against the extraterrestrials reminds me the relationship between humans and animals. So, if we ask to an animal, what do you think about humans? What would be the answer of the animal? So let's think about what humans have been doing to animals. Humans have been hunting them just for fun, as a sport. Humans have been destroying the animals just for fear, for the fear cult. And humans are cutting them to eat them in the grocery store. But on the other hand, other humans, they are from the same planet, by the way, maybe from the same race, but maybe from the same country, they are protecting the animal life. They are loving the animals. They are saving their lives. Most of the humans have pet dogs, pet animals, cats at their homes. And they treat the animals as a family member, and they respect the rights of the animals, like PETA or other organizations. So what would be the answer of animals about humans? Some of them would say that, oh, we love them, they help us, they save us. And some of them would say that they are horrible. They have been doing all kinds of cruel things to our race. So, but we are talking about the same human. So our situation with extraterrestrials is the same, I think.
You mentioned that you and your family and yourself are multi-generational contactees. I'm wondering, since you've moved to the state, has your personal encounters been continuing, or sightings continuing?
Well, this is what I believe. Once the close encounter starts, it never ends. But the shape and the level of the encounter can change in time. And also, in my case, we know that, as far as we know, the contact started with my great-grandfather, but maybe it started before him. We don't know. Maybe it started with his great-grandfather, but they didn't know how to describe this encounter, and they didn't know anything about extraterrestrials. They said, oh, they were jinns, they were demons, or they were angels, related to experience. And again, they are interested in are family lines, bloodline, and they are interested in our DNA. So that's why the contact goes from one generation to other generation, from one family, it goes into the future. And in fact, in a bigger scale, all of us, we are in contact. It is not individual. It is not something personal. We don't need to see an extraterrestrial in our living room to be able to say that, yes, I am in contact. We are, all of us, we are in contact in one way or another. Because, as I said before, our government system, our culture, our historical cases, our religious beliefs, our art, our temples, were shaped by extraterrestrials. And when did this start? We don't know, but we can trace back to the history until a point, and we can see how they started to influence and affect the Earth life. So did they stop? No, they didn't stop. Today, if you want to see how close are the extraterrestrials to us, let's look at the television. Let's look at the music video clips. Let's look at the movie productions, the science fiction movies. Contact is not happening always face-to-face. Yes, there is direct contact, but there is indirect contact. Look at the television series, just like X-Files, just like V. Do you remember V? It was from 1980s.
So there is a television show. I'm an old science fiction movie buff.
Yes. So for some reason, V finished very quickly. But in that television series, there was lots of open, very clear information.
So, well, the aliens in V were reptilians.
Yes, yes, of course. So, in fact, when that movie was done, people didn't know about reptilians. The reptilian concept wasn't very popular. They became first Grace and then reptilian. And many of us, we are in contact, even though we are not aware of that contact.
A lot of it that you've covered makes a lot of sense.
I cannot hear you. Can you repeat it, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. A lot of what you were just saying makes a lot of sense to me after, you know, doing some research into abductions and abduction cases and what the different experiences are like. And it does sound like the jinns might be grays.
Maybe. And again, I'm not the person to give the exact answer because I don't know either. I'm just telling you my own experiences based on my research. But maybe they are, maybe they are not. But there is something strange that we still cannot solve. And that's why we are on this path. And believe me, most of the times, working in this area, it's a self-sacrificial. It's a passion at the same time. But we are facing a huge unknown. And what you are doing is the same thing. What ICAR is doing is the same thing. What many abduction research groups are doing is the same thing. We are facing with an unknown. And we are able to find out as long as they want us to know. So we are a little bit under the control of this unknown.
It makes me wonder, too, why they show visions or tell contactees of natural disasters in you know, weather upheavals and all this. Excuse me. You know, whether they're saying, look, this is what you're doing to your planet, you got to stop.
Well, this may be one of the reasons. And also in the past, let's remember two continents, Atlantis and Mu. So they were, again, very advanced civilizations, technologically and spiritually. They were representing different energies. Mu continent was located in Pacific Ocean. So Pacific, it means peaceful. The Mu civilization was a more peaceful civilization. Atlantis, continent Atlantis, was located on Atlantic Ocean. And yes, they were advanced in spiritually, but they were very much advanced in technology, space technology. So after a point, just like we are doing today, they poisoned themselves with their high technology and the civilization finished. Now today, of course, I love technology. I cannot imagine a life without cell phones, without satellites, without email, all these things. And I know that in the next 10 years, what we have today technologically will be very old-fashioned because technology is very fast and we are going to have much more than we have today. And I cannot imagine a life without emails, professionally and personally. And all these things are wonderful. But at the same time, we also know that technology can be a very dangerous weapon in the wrong hands. Same technology. So, in many ways, in our universe, the life is based on duality. Positive and negative forces. Black and white. So, the same thing can be used in the very positive ways, the same thing can be used in the very negative ways.
Okay, so, we've got about 30 seconds or so left. Would you like to mention your book and your website again?
My website is www.farahyurduzu.com, and my book's title is Confessions of a Turkish Ufologist. So just Farah and UFO, Google it. It is going to take you to my website, to my book links, and all these things that we spoke tonight.
I've enjoyed this tonight. I wish we had more time, but unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and also thank all of you who joined us in the Pal Talk Auditorium. Stay tuned for Voice of the People, hosted by November Hansen. Her guest tonight will be Lewis Kelly. Join us again next Saturday on the Paranormal Radio Network for another episode of Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, when my guest will be Rob Simone. Until then, keep an eye to the sky. And thank you, Farah, and good night, everybody.
Thank you very much. Have a nice night.